Hey, good day, everyone. I'm Robin Sparrow on the Viral Volley Podcast, and we've got our AVP Champions Cup Series edition of the podcast. After an incredibly entertaining first weekend of AVP Champions Cup Series presented by Acer as the official tagline, we saw six three-set tiebreaks to kick off the Monster Hydro Cup weekend, the first of three weekends in the series. And on the women's side, we saw a 1-4 matchup in the final. On the men's, we saw a 1-2 matchup. And so with me this morning, I've got Santa Clara Beach Volleyball Associate Head Coach Jeff Alzina. That is not Gandalf, as I was shocked. I hadn't seen Jeff in some time. But, you know, the SCU website refers to you as one with a diverse background in both the indoor and beach games from high school through Olympic-level teams and is the winningest coach in AVP beach volleyball history with more than, get this, 1,100 victories to his credit. I just know him as an extremely knowledgeable strategist, coach, commentator, comedian, and dare I say, entertaining storyteller, but that's for another conversation. Thanks for joining me this morning, Jeff.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I appreciate it.
Hey, it was great to hear you on the Prime Video live stream because nothing better than having quality commentator commentating with skills, knowledge, and just an insight to the game like you have. So excellent job this last week. I don't say that to toot your horn. It's just as a volley dweeb, I totally appreciate that kind of stuff. So great work this last weekend.
Thanks. You're no dweeb. You're a volley fan. And we appreciate all the volley fans tuning in. We're really stoked to be able to cover court two. You know, they've never done that before, had a live commentating on an outside court. And not throughout the entire tournament. So we're really stoked to try and make some upgrades for this week, solve some tech issues, and we're actually trying to get some more camera angles provided too. They have more than three cameras out there. I think they have four that are on site. So we just got to figure out how to access them and continue the audio feed while we do that.
Well, anything was better than trying to find all the players' Instagram Live and Facebook Live feeds that were going on the Friday qualifier. But, I mean, it just shows how hungry a lot of us are for beach volleyball and the first technical professional event to go in the United States. So, and in California, for that matter.
So many other beaches not being able to be open due to the county restrictions, or let alone if they're open, you cannot play, either beach volleyball or do anything besides go out in the water. It's really nice to be able to have something that we can execute, and the pros were just itching to play and not being able to have any FIVB, quality competition that would help towards Olympic practice. It's been awesome. And everybody's really stoked to get out and play. It's good.
Right on. Well, hey, let's jump into the action after this first weekend of play. It was a Monster Hydro Cup, and got to ask you, on the women's side, what teams do you feel were really firing on all cylinders?
Well, April and Alex obviously looked really good. I thought, they had some slow hiccup times throughout some of their matches, but Jen Kessie had done a phenomenal job. I'm not sure why she's still not in the box coaching them, but she has really developed them into one of the best teams in the world. It looks like they're going to stay at the top for a while. They just balance each other really well. They know each other's role, not only physically on the court, but emotionally and communicatively. There's like just very strong roles that they play. And so all those things help make you, they take you from being like 97% of your best to 100% of your best, right? When it's not just a skill issue, but all the little things that all the great teams in all sports have, right? The leadership, the way you communicate with each other, the expectations, the motivations that are shared and bounced off each other in different ways. So they looked really, really good. And I give a lot of credit to Jennifer Kessie for preparing them and getting there over the last 3.5 years.
Now, from your standpoint, I mean, it was commented on that they started slow in the beginning of sets, but then they really turned it on. Is that something that you observed as well? And what do you see is, what started that for them?
That's a great question. I don't really know why they started like that, but I do remember having coached during the rise of Carrie and Misty that they were often the same way. Carrie and Misty, when they were in the early 2000s, would very often be in a close type game around 9, 10, 11. At that first technical timeout, they weren't always up by more than two against even, the 16 seed or whatnot. But come around 14, that's when they turned it on. So I don't know about their individual psychology, but I just think sometimes there's a possibility for high ranking or high level teams to maybe even be challenging themselves in different ways early in a match, you know, and maybe be working on subtle things that most people might not notice. And so they might be working on some tougher things that aren't allowing them to execute perfectly. And then when it gets into crunch time, if needed, either those things have honed themselves enough within the match, or they fall back to like, okay, it's time to just go back to, you know, bread and butter and start playing exactly what we need to do. So, you know, I can't speak on exactly what that case is, but it really is in our sport, in this rally scoring, it's how you finish. Mm-hmm. And they finished really well every time.
Now, did it surprise you that the level of play was as high as it was during the tournament, being that technically we've been on a break since November of 2019 because of obviously this off season and then the pandemic hitting in March?
Yeah, I was actually surprised. Everyone that I had talked to playing wise over the last few months, you know, they were in a holding pattern, and a lot of these teams were only able to like get, whether they were touching a ball or training individually or training just as a team, when it's usually in July and you're going to compete, you need reps against other teams and good teams. Mm-hmm. And not everybody was able to go out and get those kind of reps, you know, like the scrimmages where you're battling hard against someone ranked within three or four spots of yourself or above you. I was really impressed and happy to see that people kind of like rose to the occasion, and their past experiences or their chemistry or whatever they've had propelled them as far as they did, you know, having maybe some of them maybe just 2 or 3 weeks to properly train, you know, to train at the highest level and compete against other players.
Now, how about let's shift over to the other side. On the men's side, who do you feel like was firing on all cylinders on that side of the bracket?
I don't know if anybody was firing on all cylinders. Can't use that word all, but most cylinders maybe. Okay. I don't know. I talked to a lot of the guys during the event and after the event, and they all said that was 2016 or 2017 Phil. They're like, that's the Phil that we haven't seen for a few years that, you know, is out there jump serving, cracking balls on two. I mean, honestly, that's Phil and Nick. There's so many things you can say. Like, they've looked unmotivated and they've looked unpolished at times over the past couple of years. And it looks like it just takes everything to get their A game out of them. But they showed it. And frankly, my personal opinion, I think they should have been running on two type stuff for years. You know, I was never sure why Phil didn't do that once he started playing with Nick or Rosie. I know that when he played with Todd Rogers, Todd did not want to do that. Todd didn't want to get into a situation where it was like, I don't know if I'm hitting or not, or I'm forcing balls up for Phil to hit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Todd didn't want to run that. But, you know, I'm not sure why Sean and or Nick would not have wanted to run that more. I mean, Phil is just, when these guys can take that pass that goes, it starts on the right and blows all the way across to the left side of the court. So you're not hitting on two out of the middle. He's hitting on twos like halfway into the left side of the court. And so that's just a tremendous amount of chasing for a blocker to have to do, right? If you have to go try to front fill and then get all the way back out to the pin, that's like, I don't know, it's like 17 feet a blocker has to travel. And we're not swing blocking, so we can't really glide out there too much. So I think they looked really good. Nick looked like he was being extremely supportive. Through his gestures and his words on the court. And Phil just looked focused and hungry and agile and energetic. They were really good. They played very close to the top of their game.
What was the kind of final that people wanted to see? Went to a third set tiebreak with a deuce set for the third. So it definitely went down to the last few moments there grinding at it. But, you know, in the end, Phil's performance was pretty amazing to see. You know, a lot of people were commenting on how he really stepped it up in that championship matchup.
Yeah, the third set was awesome. The tiebreaker was phenomenal. And I know that Jake's still killing himself about getting blocked by Nick at 12-12. I mean, it seemed like kind of a cute thing at first, like, oh, darn, I got blocked by – but Jake knew. He knew that's huge because as a team, you know that going into these freezes, it's crucial to get the one-point add. If I get to 14 and I'm playing you, if I get to 14 before you do at 13, you have to score 3 real points before I score any.
Wow.
And that's huge. That doesn't even happen all that often in a normal set to 21, where someone just goes three in a row unanswered. I mean, that's a kind of a streak or a run, right?
Right.
And it's hard to get a run at the very end of a match when everybody's kind of like play their plan A, plan B, and they're basically all in plan C at this point, mm-hmm. right? Answering each other in the chess match. And so, that Taylor and Jake had the ad before that play, and then they lost the ad on a play, you know, that typically wouldn't happen, getting blocked by a 6'2" guy when you're 6'7". So
I do think you brought that up, because even watching the Prime Video stream, it's, the commentator saying, "Oh, it was a great, a lighthearted moment," but I mean, understanding how serious that situation was in gameplay for Jake and Taylor. I mean, when you're in match, it's a big loss.
That was huge. That was huge. I mean, it's so hard when you need to only score one and you know that your partner, your opponent has to score three in a row. That's a tough situation. That's the freeze is fun. And it does happen once in a while, but very different to be holding that where you're just like, if you're facing match point every time you side out versus you're facing a tie.
Right.
It's a pretty big difference. So.
Well, next question for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
What team or teams caught your eye? First, we'll do the women's side.
Women's? I didn't get to see Callahan and Jones play. And I've only seen a couple plays here and there, like after the fact. But obviously, they did really well. And all I can say is I remember Tracy way back from when I was starting the EDP, the USA Elite Development Program, in 2011 or 2012. And she wasn't like the typical, I don't know. She just wasn't in like the circles of training and all that stuff, but she was really good. And so people weren't picking her up as a partner and people were kind of, I just remember her like almost being overlooked a lot.
Right.
And I couldn't be happier for her. I'm just really stoked that she stuck with it, grinded through some of those periods. You know, I think she probably went through a questioning period about play. She got into coaching. She went up Florida State and coached a bit. She did some work with the AVP.
Yeah.
But to see her be able to come back and get her body in like absolute world-class shape and understand the game a little deeper, like it's really cool to see her doing that well. So I just want to give her some credit and props there.
Yeah, her partner, Chrissy Jones, I didn't get to see her play a lot, during the her collegiate years, but the times that I did see her, and she just was capable of going on intense scoring runs. She would just take over the net. So when I saw that Tracy Callahan was shifting to become a defender, like, well, you know, she's got a great blocker. So it can't be too challenging for her behind the block of Chrissy Jones. And it showed. Gosh, there's so much potential in Chrissy Jones. Just a great read. She just reads well, reads the game well, and she is a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah. Obviously, she took that third last year with Zana, which was unbelievable, coming deep out of the qualifiers. Was it Hermosa, I think?
Yes. Yep.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'd like to watch them play a little bit more. I just haven't been able to see the women's side. I called all of the men's games this past weekend. And so my small breaks were during some of the women's coverage, and I needed to take care of my five-year-old during those breaks.
just like put more beach volleyball in front of your five-year-old. Get them started early.
Yeah, for sure. I'm hoping she's a golfer.
Other
women's teams?
What's that?
Other women's teams?
Oh, yeah, if you have other ones, for sure.
Well, yeah, I wanted to comment for sure on – I wanted to Pavanen and Melissa also obviously looked quite good at times. Melissa just looks to me like if she can come up with a little bit more range on her offense, they could break through. And I'd like to see them run their on-two. The stuff that teams were doing where they were passing across the court so that their player could go on-two all the way in their half of the court or set the ball back out to the pin or in the middle, that – I just really believe in that kind of play. And I've seen them do that more in the past, and they didn't run it too much down the Long Beach. And I'm not sure why. Sometimes teams don't run it like in Hermosa or Manhattan because the sand's too deep. But I know that was a jumper's beach and you could be really quick down in Long Beach. So I'd like to see them try to run that a little bit more and open up the block for Melissa.
Yeah, actually, you know, one of the things that I really, that really stuck out for me on the team of Juana Paredes and Pavan was Melissa's like body has changed. Like she is like, seems more lean. Not that she wasn't out of shape before, but she just seems a little more efficient and able to move a lot better. Like she's already moving really good before, but is she like, she changed her body in this time during the quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She looks strong. She definitely looks strong and maybe even a little quicker. I think she could just use a little more range in where she hits that ball, at least in some of the bigger games.
One of the new partnerships, I hate to force you into this because I know you had your string of teams, but Sarah Hughes and Brandi Wilkerson were a new team to watch this last weekend. Any thoughts on their performance and what you got to observe of them?
Well, I told a friend of mine that I thought they had a chance to win the tournament before the tournament started, before even seeing them play. I hold them in pretty high regard as far as overall players and as competitors. And that's something that people overlook a lot, is you can be very skilled and you can be what ranked or whatnot, but it's like, what kind of competitor are you? And I think Sarah Hughes is a very, very tough competitor. She's very focused on winning, and so is Brandi. So Sarah, I like Sarah on the left more than on the right as well. Mm-hmm. And that obviously brought in the on two options with Brandi being left-handed on the right. And then that defensive combination, Brandi, I think, is one of the better position blockers. You know, mm-hmm. She's not the tallest blocker, may not affect people a certain way, the way that like Alex Kleinman does, but she gets across the net and puts a shadow behind her of what she's taking. So she covers a ton of space as a blocker, and Sarah's a really good read defender that also scores when she digs pretty well. You know, yeah. She likes to be aggressive and swing in transition. So I wasn't surprised to see them do well. I think they may even do better next week. They were awesome. That's a really good team. And I know that they've only had, I think, a couple weeks of training together. So if they've got to stay together this week and get a lot of quality reps in, I would be surprised to see them maybe, you know, one match closer to winning this weekend.
Well, the one match closer would mean winning the championship, being that they played in the final.
Yes, exactly.
We'll get your predictions at the end here.
I think they could win it. I think they could definitely win it. So,
yeah. Well, how about let's shift over to the men's side. What are the teams that caught your eye on the men's side?
Well, Case Beer and Hayden was the first game I called, and they showed signs. They showed a lot of signs of having some really good offense. They couldn't quite click defensively, and they didn't finish well overall. But they also they did the opposite of what we're talking about, Kleinman. They started well in games and then kind of fell off at the end. They were also running a whole bunch of, you know, fake on two, push set. Right. And when they could run that, when they passed well enough to run that, they looked really, really good. Jeremy was setting that ball out to Hayden really well, who still has so much phenomenal offense. It's a joke. He's 47 and he's in Tennessee and his game looks like it hasn't lost a step. And then Hayden was hand-setting.
Yeah.
He's never hand-set his whole career ever. And not only was he hand-setting, he's running offense with his hands. So I think they will do better next weekend also. They were super limited in their ability to train together before the event.
Right.
But they showed some really good signs in the two matches I called watching them. They were close and just couldn't quite close it out at the end. So I think if they click a little more on defense and passing, they will move up.
Yeah. Any other teams stick out for you on the men's side?
I thought Skylar Del Sol played really, really well with Rutledge. Mm-hmm. I called their game, and that was their third game. That was their elimination match. And Ed just looked tired. Ed looked gassed. Not to where, like, he couldn't perform at all, but he was, like, not the same at the end of the match when they needed him as he was in the first 15 points.
Right.
There was what I saw was a pretty observable fall off physically. But Del Sol was legit. He had played to his strengths as best as he could. You know, I think he's a good jumper and a rangy hitter, and he was doing that. He was very confident in his ability to move the ball around offensively. And then his setting's excellent.
Yeah.
And so he was able to get some balls up to Ed that really helped him side out as well when they went to him.
One of the other teams that got a lot of airtime and also mentioned was the new team of Chase Budinger and Kame Schalk. Any comments on their performance? Because I personally thought that Schalk's defense was a lot better than I'd seen in recent years.
Better, for sure, better. He's still a work in a project, in my opinion, but a work in progress. But yes, he dug a lot more balls than I think he typically does. He still gets caught leaning or just overholding and missing the read. I don't know. If I had to guess, it looks like he is watching the set ball, a little too long. He's not getting his eye off that set ball and then looking directly at the shoulders or the elbow of his attacker to give him his first step or his first read or lean, whatever you're going to move on. But yes, totally improved defense. Taylor took over at the very end of that game. Taylor had two in their elimination match to Gibbon and Crabb. Taylor had two overhand digs in a row. One was like open hand and one was like a tomahawk behind him that saved, again, the ad going into the freeze.
Right.
That they couldn't do anything about. But yeah, Budinger looked good. He was setting really well. They were also running a lot of the options, right? The spread offense with the possible on two and the push.
Yep. I
know it's been said before, so I don't mean to be cliche, but they do both lack a little bit of fire. And to win those close games at the end, you know, in this, you know, on Sundays and in finals, you need usually to have somebody be able to push a button that's like next level, even for 1 or 2 points.
Yeah.
And they don't really have, they're both pretty quiet.
Bust out that X factor, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know where that will come, if one of them will just kind of feel that or it'll organically happen, or maybe one of them needs to just realize, I'll be that guy.
Right.
See if they can make that happen. Budinger's passing and blocking still needs work, though. If you serve a ball right at him, he's great. He's in system. But when he's out of system, he doesn't better the ball necessarily as a passer. And then blocking, I think that he takes too much. He definitely tries to make too many moves up there in the middle of one jump. You know, I think if Budinger did a little more of Phil style or even Brandy Wilkerson style, like just get straight up, get straight over as far as you can go a little bit earlier, he'd dictate more of the offensive action.
Wow, fans, you get some free coaching there courtesy of Jeff Alzina there. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Trying to take too much. I mean, that makes sense. You know, they can funnel the ball towards your defender a little bit better and more predictable balls, not playing chaos ball off the block, just guessing where the ball is going to deflect to, right?
Right. It's so hard, though. I mean, I'm sitting here in a chair saying this is a 6'1" guy. I mean, when you're up there hanging, you know, he's 6'7", 6'8", and he's got great jump. Like, you want to make moves and chase balls at times. And, you know, the hitters are very deceptive. But sometimes the more you move, the instead of – it doesn't create more stuff you're taking. It creates more opportunities to chisel or go around you.
Yeah. Okay, on the other side of things, what men's teams do you, I guess, caught your eye, or actually that probably could have performed a little better? We'll call it that. Or perform below expectations. How about that?
I mean, there's seeds, right? And then who didn't do well with their seed or whatnot? But I don't know if that's, again, the case. Those seeds are somewhat arbitrary, especially after like the third or fourth slot. Right. I mean, Tri didn't have his full points, so they barely squeaked in as the six, you know.
Right.
Casebeer had a bunch of points, but played with Hyden. So I don't really know if the seeds were indicative last week of where they should have been or not. I think that Theo and Casey will play better. They played well at times, but they, you know, they've played together before, and it just didn't totally look like it at times. I think they'll play a little bit better. And then Trevor and Tri obviously played really well at times. But Trevor had trouble. I looked at his stats and the games they lost, he was hitting a low percentage. He was hitting under 200, right? Which is typically he's more of a 68% to 74% side out guy.
Yeah.
But we know, and he knows that, you know, obviously Phil does things to people that other blockers don't.
He's blocked by Phil.
Right. But Trevor's got a look. You could see that he wasn't really looking. Yeah. I don't know how much they're using a call right now or listening to a call. Trevor's usually just based on his eyes. Mm-hmm. And it looked like he wasn't really seeing the court as well in some of those games that they lost when they got tied against Jake, obviously, and then against Phil. So he needs to make sure he's getting the set he wants with enough space from the net so he doesn't have to worry about trying to identify where the block is while it has a chance to touch him.
Yeah.
You want to be able to identify the block with no chance to touch you, right? So he needs that ball to be off the net enough so he can hang back enough and use his vision because he has really, really good vision. And you need it most in transition on broken plays. And it just looked like a few plays here and there, he didn't have it.
Yeah. Now, interesting you mentioned that because being that it was a fanless event, I'm trying to listen for what's going on the court. And I do recall it being a little quieter on Tri and Trevor's side, you know, in regards to making the call. So that's a great observation. I didn't realize because usually it's a full fan event. You're not hearing a thing anyways, but
yeah.
A lot of it was read from what you're describing.
Yeah. Yeah, Trevor, he'll listen to a call here and there, but his best games, when he's on his game, he's just a looker.
Yeah.
So he has to pass it to a certain way and get a set that he likes, so that it keeps him in the right spot to be able to take that quick peek.
Right. Now, one of the teams out of the qualifier that I wanted to get your thoughts on were the Killer Bees, Eric Baranek and Andy Benish, or Baranish.
Right.
Did you get to see a lot of their play during the qualies? And then,
I didn't. I had to work on Friday, and so I couldn't just sit and watch the qualifier the way I probably wanted to see who was going to go forward and all that. But I know Andy. He played in our club when I used to work with SCBC. Uh-huh. And he was a total stud. He was on our – if I was never his coach, but I was a year above or behind him on those years, and he was just a total man-child as a high school blocker and middle hitter. He was awesome. And then Eric was in the USA program that I ran for a while, and it was really neat to see Eric during that EDP two-year period he was in there really get better in those 2 years, and I think he's gotten better every year since. So he's getting pretty close to being someone who can start – I don't know, contending to be playing for Sundays. Yeah. Close. But, you know, so much of when I watch these players, one of the biggest things is just decision-making. And when you're younger, it's rare to have really quality decision-making over and over and over on the volleyball court. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think that's why you see the American players playing into their 30s and 40s. Because if you're good already in your 20s and you stick around, you just start getting so much better at the, like, what we call the little things, you know?
Yeah.
The stuff that Trevor is trying to do, where he's just looking and not relying on a call, but, like, getting peaks, right? And then there's the decisions you execute in those huge key moments. And usually you just get better and better at making those decisions in your 30s. So yeah. Baranek is someone who's, like, he's close and he's real physical and he's smart. He's got a high IQ, but, you know, it's just – again, vision and decision-making kind of comes down to it when you're sighting out to win matches.
You know, what I thought was interesting about that particular match or that team was, so they didn't really have any, like, major stats. Like, there wasn't one player that stuck out above the other performance-wise, except for the match they went three against, like, it was Drost and the Avatar. Yeah. Baranek got 25 kills, but that was it. But otherwise, the rest of their matches, they were totally balanced, which was great for them winning. So
that's awesome.
I'm definitely watching that team this week.
Yeah, they're a fan favorite. They have good energy and mojo between them. Like, I think they can crack through there for sure.
Yeah. Well, that actually is a great segue into week number two, which is the Wilson Cup. And we're still waiting to find out which stream you're going to be on, but it's going to be entertaining nonetheless. But just to start it off, we got some news right off the top. On the women's side, Carissa Cook has been reported as being out, and her partner Jace Pardon picks up former University of Hawaii standout Emily Hartung, and they go in as the number 8 seed. On the men's side, Sean Rosenthal has sustained an injury. I believe it's a rotator cuff, if I read correctly.
Yes.
And so his partner, Bill Kalinske, picks up Mark Burek, and they come into the qualifiers as the number 12 seed. So my question for you, Jeff, is who are the top teams to watch to make it out of the qualifiers? First for the women, then for the men.
Ooh.
I don't know, but... I'm going to go with Benish and Baranek was one of the top teams to watch out of there. And, of course, yeah. Ed Radlich and Skylar Del Sol again.
Those are safe bets. Those are safe bets. I like those.
But then you also have the number one seed in the qualifier bracket is Stafford Slick and Billy Allen. And then Reed Pretty and David Lee as the number 3 seed. And
I don't love that team.
Yeah.
So you need, I don't know. You need someone who's even a little beachier. I mean, Reed's been out there for a while, but that's, I don't know. That's tough. If the teams are going to serve David Lee, he doesn't have a ton of beach experience. And those are some pretty gnarly teams to go against to get out of that qualifier. And I don't know. I thought I saw a quick peek of one of their matches on Friday, and I believe David Lee was playing on the right. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to be getting served, I think he should be on the left. He's played a middle attacker his whole career. He's used to the setter being on his right side. I think Reed is the better passer, obviously.
Yeah.
He's playing outside at the highest level forever. So I don't know. if Reed's on the right and David Lee's on the left, they might have a chance there. Billy and Stafford looked a little flat. I talked to their coach, John Mayer, a little bit the other day, trying to discuss some things that might focus that team to play even harder. I mean, they're both really low-key guys, but at times I've seen Stafford be an animal. Mm-hmm. You know, when he won with Billy in 2017, I think, in Seattle, they beat Rosie and Trevor. Like, Stafford was a monster. He, like, before the game, he was just like bouncing balls and like talking and just jacked up. It looked like he had a bunch of Red Bull in him or something. And I mean, he was a monster. He looked like he was ready to win before the match even started. He played like super hyper aggressive all match long. And I don't know, I didn't see that at all in Long Beach last weekend. So if they're on, that's a tough team to beat if they're playing, you know, competitively and gelling the way they should.
Well, let's look at the women's side of the qualifier. You have in the number one seed on the qualification day, Emily Day, Lauren Fendrick. Two, Kelly Reeves, Therese Cannon. Three seed, Mackenzie Ponnett, Sheila Shaw. And the four seed, Amanda Dowdy and Zanamino. Who do you pick coming out of the women's qualifier? And I could go deeper. Jace Pardon again and Emily Hartung are at the number eight.
Who was it, the one?
The one was Day Fendrick.
Oh, I don't know. They didn't look too hot. Obviously, you know, that could have just been one or two matches that they played poorly. I don't know. But I know there's not a true defender on that team. That's two people who have blocked almost their entire career. I don't love that team. I don't know how much they're getting to train together. I don't know how much Lauren gets to train, period. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't call them like a favorite, even though they're the one seed. Hartung is really good. I was training her and Katie Spieler a bunch before I moved up to Santa Clara. And I think that girl has tremendous potential. If she can be training full time and be around the right group of people training, Hartung's gnarly. She's really, really good. I'd like to see her do well. Pardon, obviously, is a really good ball control player and a really steady emotional player, so they could surprise some people. Zanamuno and Dowdy, I don't know. Again, same. I don't know how much they've got to train together, but individually, that's two really good players. I mean, Dowdy's huge on the block and has a lot of experience, and Zana, you know, one of the best competitors and all-around volleyball players I've seen at her age in a long time.
Yep. Definitely an entertainer on the court, man. She makes some plays happen.
Yeah, Zana's awesome.
Going to put you on the spot here. Who do you pick to be in the final for the women's, the two teams?
Wow. I think Brandy and Sarah are going to be there again. Mm-hmm. And gosh, it's tough to determine who might lose to them directly or lose early enough before the crossover to get to that final. I'm going to say it's going to be the same final.
Okay.
I think it's going to be the same final.
Same question on the men's side. Who's going to be playing in the final?
Gosh, I really would like to see Trevor and Tri break through, beating one of those top two teams to get to that final, if not win. But, gosh, Jake and Taylor looked really good. Phil and Nick looked really good. It's really hard to say that either of them won't be there again. Those teams looked polished and they've been together for so long, and at those highest levels, again, it's not just having great offense or defense, you have to have both, and they really did. Trevor and Tri have great offense, but and their defense is improving, but it's not at the level of their offense, and so it's really hard to like pick them to say like, yes, suddenly their defense is going to be on, they're going to score enough real points to allow their offense to fall off when they play one of those top two teams, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you normally sign out at 70%, but then you play against Phil or Jake and you only sign out at 60%, well, then you've got to score 10% more. Yeah. I don't know if their offense can do that. So I hate to be the boring guy, but I would pick the same two teams again.
Yeah.
The same way.
Well, I mean, it was went to a third set tiebreak with a deuce third set. So, and the entire match, they were neck and neck. You know, it could have gone either way. So
definitely.
Good
definitely.
Call, though. You know, I forgot to mention earlier before mentioning the Wilson Cup was interesting news this week. Hermosa Beach, prohibited the playing of volleyball, which meant a lot of people either didn't get to train where they wanted to and they had to find somewhere else. Any thoughts on the current climate and atmosphere? I mean, I'm hoping they got a chance to at least play on the Long Beach courts if they were available.
Right, and I haven't heard that. I'll check that out for you and try and get back. That's interesting because that is where they should train. I've to go on a mini soapbox, there's one thing I can tell you is I've been telling USA Volleyball for years when I was working with them that they should almost like disallow people from training in Hermosa just due to its ease when there's an upcoming tournament overseas that's on hard pack. Mm-hmm. Because I think you've seen it at times where teams just play the shot game because they're training in Hermosa or Manhattan all the time. And Hermosa, Manhattan is totally based on a side wind, and there's always going to be 8 to 10 mile an hour wind and deep sand. And then you go somewhere like, you know, they might have an Olympic qualification event that's indoors.
Right.
Indoor sand thing. It's like no one's got training for that except all the European players. And they're going to be out there just highball banging all the time. And the guys are still, you know, the Americans are playing shooty ball.
Yeah.
So I think they should be trying to find some beach where it is hard packed and go for that. But without asserting my political viewpoints, I think it's kind of a shame that you can't be outdoors in Hermosa Beach right now. Two people on the side of a court in an outdoor area seems so much safer than sitting in a restaurant with 100 people and closed windows and doors. So I don't get that at all. I think everybody should go check out Chris Brown's Facebook page. He's got a lot to say about that as the president of the CBVA.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The courts down at Magnolia are full in Huntington Beach. So you'll see some pretty sure. recognizable names down there. This was surfing over there yesterday.
Orange County is a little bit different than South Bay right now, how they view COVID, I think.
Yeah. Well, hey, everyone, that's Jeff Alzina, associate head coach of Santa Clara University, but also the volleyball sage, the Gandalf of beach volleyball, now I can say, now I've seen him now, but you'll be hearing him on one of the Prime Video streams this weekend, and I believe it starts Saturday. We're kind of hoping and pray it starts tomorrow, but he hasn't got the notification, so my guess is it's a no, but Jeff, keep up the good work on the streams and covering the game and just giving your insight, knowledge, your skills, and just your the stories of the game, because it's truly appreciated. It adds so much to the AVP streams on Prime Video. So thanks again.
I appreciate it, Rob. Yeah, we'll be on court too, though. I'll be on court too all day Saturday and Sunday morning.
Oh, he must have got the text. We're real time here now.
That's right.
All right. Thanks again, Jeff.
Thank you.
Rob Espero here for the Viral Volley Podcast. Be sure to keep up with the AVP Champions Cup Series by following AVP Beach both on Instagram and Twitter. Also, I'll be posting scores as the days go along on @RobOnTheMic. Again, be sure to click back in for the Viral Volley Podcast or Vodcast, depending on what device or what platform you're watching on.